So let's start with our wonderful prayer from Mother. O Heavenly, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, beloved David, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple, make my heart thy altar, make my love thy home. Be thou the only king, reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Listen, I'll do a short meditation and let other people come in as they can. Our Bible reading tonight is from 1 John chapter 4. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. Hereby know ye the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesseth that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of Antichrist, whereof ye have heard that it should come, and even now already is it in the world. Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. They are of the world, therefore speak they of the world, and the world heareth them. We are of God. He that knoweth God heareth us. He that is not of God heareth not us. Hereby know we the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and every one that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. In this was manifested the love of God toward us, because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world, that we might live through him. Herein is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us, and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. No man hath seen God at any time. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. Hereby know that we dwell in him, and he in us, because he hath given us his Spirit. And we have seen and do testify that the Father sent the Son to be the Savior of the world. Whosoever shall confess that Jesus is the Son of God, God dwelleth in him, and he in God. And we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. Herein is our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God loveth his brother also. So some of that is well explained. The part that we have trouble with is that you must confess that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh of God. Now, those of us trained by Mother and David would say that Jesus Christ represents the divine incarnation, which is possible for all of us to attain, and it sometimes comes in as an avatar. As the Christians call that, the incarnation. It's very similar, if not identical, to the notion that the East has of an avatar. But we can all attain that state. So when we confess that Jesus has come within the flesh, is of God, is to acknowledge in our understanding that we can attain the highest salvation in God, the highest state of consciousness, which the Christ is said to have manifested, that is brought to, and that we see and know of in perfect masters, in what are called satgurus, but also somebody who exists in sahaja samadhi, all these terms. So if we turn it around like that, we're pretty happy. We don't know what they meant by it, other than they knew Jesus, for this is John speaking, not Paul, so he was one of the ones who knew Jesus. Now, this very likely wasn't written by John, but this is only from scholars' point of view. Could have been written by him, but it probably reflected his teachings and his belief. Some of these sentences may have been pushed in. But there's so much good here that he talks of They are of the world, therefore they speak they of the world, and the world heareth them. We are of God. He that knoweth God heareth us. He that is not of God heareth not us. Hereby know we the Spirit and the spirit of error. And then he talks about love of all of us for God and love of all of us for each other. And he that loveth not knoweth not God. Those kinds of things. And then the idea comes that no man hath seen God at any time. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. So that's back to clear language, that which is that we love one another, God dwelleth in us. Hereby know we that we dwell in him, and he in us. Because he hath given us this of his Spirit. So, that's the start, isn't it? Question is, can we, though we have been given his Spirit, of his Spirit, do we not have access to his very Spirit, his very self? And then the notion that God sent the Father to be the Savior of the world is the next major feature. This is kind of like reading the Nicene Creed or a portion of it. And he's setting it down that these are things to be understood as basic teachings. Father sent the Son to be the Savior of the world. And whosoever shall confess that Jesus is the Son of God, God dwelleth in him, and he in God. You know, we have no trouble with that. And we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. A repeat of that. Herein our love made perfect, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. Because as he is, so are we in this world. Very interesting. And then this beautiful thing, this idea, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear. Because fear hath torment. He that feareth is not made perfect in love. Meher Baba, and throughout the Bible too, but Meher Baba said, don't worry. Be happy. And throughout the Bible, be not afraid. Fear not. And then we start into the final sentences of love itself. We love him because he first loved us. If a man say, I love God and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother, whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And here we have the final recapitulation of the two great commandments from Jesus, said in a different way. And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God love his brother also. That's a nice way of consolidating Jesus' commandments. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the trying the spirits, because that's the first sentence in this. Beloved, believe it not every spirit, but try the spirits where they are of God. Many false prophets are gone out into the world. And then he says, you must believe that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. And that's how you know, or that's the worry of trying the spirits. Believe not every spirit. Well, then he starts talking about false prophets. So this is where I worry that this has been fiddled with. You add the Nicene Creed idea and the idea that Jesus has come in the flesh. Many Gnostics of the time were saying that Jesus was living and he came here, but he was not in flesh. So those are basic debates that happened at that time. Some people say other things about the coming, probably from a higher teaching, but we don't know. So much is covered up from that time. So many things destroyed. So two things. One is that we try every spirit. And the second is that we not change these teachings. So when we claim to know what God speaks for us, when we claim to know that Jesus speaks through us, I will definitely support that notion, because we've all experienced it. I certainly have. I've had God speak through me. Now, one thing that's tends to be different about that, and again, there are no rules, and let me put this forth also, that this is whoever is the author of this epistle. He's saying there's a mechanical way you can know. Just ask the person, do they believe that God is Jesus Christ and is come in the flesh as of God? That he says, and every spirit that confesses not that Jesus is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of Antichrist. So he's saying, very simple. If you confess that Jesus is come in the flesh and is God, then you're in. I wish it was that easy. But trying every spirit, that part has been retained, and it's good advice. And of course, no matter how much real connection we have to the Spirit, and we have been taught by correctly in our sadhana and by God in many, many different ways, that until you attain a state from which you cannot fall, you can be wrong about that. So we have to both know that that's true, but we have to also step out in faith that God does speak through us. It's the instrument that he uses, that he is using to communicate. And that comes out sometimes not in ways that are harmonious. Now, no denying that all things are of God, and that we are vessels of God, and we are actually emissaries for God and to this world. Each one of us, all humans. And I think, as I've said before, humans are a different state of matter, state of being, comprised of flesh, but put into a body. So the person himself is not the flesh. It's a vehicle. But all of us have that divine spirit, and we understand it in varying levels of understanding and attainment. So when the spirit moves us, and we know that it is, we feel that we've had this experience before, we've stepped out in faith before, and we've felt confirmed, convinced after the fact in reviewing it, that yeah, that seems to be God that did that. Because what? So many good things happen. Or because the power of the Spirit is so great. These are all things that contribute to our understanding of that. But they are not sufficient. The only thing sufficient is God himself. He decides whether you've done a good job in transmitting what he says. Now there's another thing that happens, and that is the reflexive statement that you make, and it comes from God. Again, it comes down to the person given that charge, the person given that spiritual impulse to speak, that person living up to the life that he or she has set before himself, but also set before him by God. Living up to that knowledge that God is part of our lives, and being able to grow in spirit, grow in God, knowing God, that person has a better chance that the reflexive statement comes from you, and if sometimes it's not pleasant, God will have you say things that are not pleasant and can cause great distress to people. So it is, but that's a dangerous teaching, and I recognize it as such. But it is true. I've experienced it in my own life. It doesn't mean that that happens, that every time it happens, it is true. But you know, being willing to speak is stepping out in faith. Being willing to let that force come through you. Imperfectly, perhaps wrong, because you're saying the opposite of what is meant, or some distorted version of what is meant. Like, we have to take this responsibility, and that's why it comes to us as being said by us as being responsible for it. But we can rest assured, to the extent that we have lived up to the requirements of attaining God, lived up to knowing that Spirit of God, spending enough time in it to be reflexive in that way. I've used this example before, but Gandhi has said, when he was shot, said to have spoke the name Ram. Now, he was a great lover of the name of God, the Ram Nam. And so he practiced that. And so when even something violent and ending his life here, he knows only God. He knows only Ram. That's because that's where he lives all the time. That's the goal. And it doesn't mean he was perfected in God, but it's a good sign that he was a great saint. It's a good sign. We shouldn't be retiring in our assertions about our relationship with God, nor our knowledge of God. And we shouldn't be fearful around representing that. Now look, we all know that we can't just cause trouble for people. Some people, when you tell them, well, that's not the way Jesus would say it, or that's not the way God would do it. They, you know, atheists, they get offended by that because they don't believe that that's a proper way to use the reasoning mind to formulate words and to assert something, to say something about something reflected in the reality in front of the people, of observing something. This comes out of us, people who think in terms of God about everything. We say, well, God must be wanting that to happen, or we must trust in God. Those kinds of things don't help some people, so we don't say them. Although we might be forced to say them sometimes. Sometimes people need to hear it, and it can be helpful for them later in their life. It can be helpful for them in other lifetimes. These things are deeply embedded. And there's hatred of God, the Antichrist perhaps, whatever that is. That which opposes all of the Spirit, all this movement of Spirit in the world. That which says it's every reason to be full of fear. This is a horrible place. You should be more fearful than you are. It's because you're a child that you're not more fearful. And you haven't had experience that will shake your faith or shake yourself. It's all understandable from the rational mind. And the rational mind is a great benefit. Great benefit. And when it's applied to the higher teachings, as Hanuman was to Rama, his complete focus was on Rama. And so things that came from him were righteous and pure. And that is the proper use of the mind. This is what Hanuman represents, is the mind. But a purified mind, a mind that's under complete control of the higher self, of Rama, in that beautiful story. Controlling the mind is everything. And you can either do it in a yoni way, by expanding and knowing all things to the extent you can, but moving in that direction and to see things in a logical fashion with a great understanding spiritually so that you don't make mistakes using the higher mind. And then there's you can use a bhakti way where you just focus on God. Focus on God alone. That is another way. You can work, you can do karma yoga, kriya yoga. You can work things through physical exercise, physical action, I should say, and physical movement of the body to do things in the, on the earth. But what's required for that, to gain benefit, to really make progress spiritually, is to know that everything you're doing is for God. I remember having this insight when I was working. So it was always clear to me that I should do a good job regardless of whether I had management that appreciated it or would give me sufficient merit to increase my pay or give me better jobs. That, in other words, that was crystal clear in my mind that it was something I did for myself, for my own either self-esteem, but certainly my own sense of righteousness. And by the way, this is not unusual. This is not some rarefied state that I'm talking about. This is most people have this idea very strongly in a properly educated and a properly raised up child. That we should contribute to this world. That we should give more than we take. But when you read about Krishna saying that you have to separate yourself from the goal completely, that's really something. And the only way really set forth to do it is to keep your mind on God, to keep your mind on Krishna, to renounce all fear, to step out with full knowledge that what you have a right to be here on this earth, just like Arjuna had a right to be on that battlefield, you have a proper role there, given to you by God. The Bhagavad Gita can talk to each one of us about our own life, about the field before us. Purukshetra means field of the Kurus. Just means a field. A battlefield. Now, Krishna was making a difficult time better for the souls. But the earth wasn't better externally necessarily. And the great, great teaching is that the advancement of souls is more important than the crimes that are committed here on this earth. Vengeance is God's. It's only proper that it be so because he's the only one who knows. He has the complete picture. He alone knows what's going on. He will have you do and say things that bring peace and consolation, but he will also bring you to the point of saying something sharp, of saying something in a difficult way. Now, is it easy to understand that you could actually slay somebody with a sword? And know that that's God acting through you. Now this is what we must confront. That when you feel God moving through you, as described by Mother Krishnabai so well, when I move my hand, when God moves through me, it is like me moving my hand. My hand does not argue with me. It doesn't put up a fight. It operates in the manner and the way that I have instructed it, that I have commanded it. And it does it without thinking, without fear. The fear may be in the person, in the higher side of the mind and the higher elements of the brain that are controlled by the soul, by the self. But the arm just does as it's told. And so when Mother Krishnabai says this, this is a great jnani, Mother Krishnabai. This is a great realization on her part, and she's telling us about it. That when I do things, please believe me that this is not done of any will of my own. And to the extent that she was a perfected being, and I have no doubt, but it doesn't matter what I think anyway, but to the extent that she was a perfected being, she was doing God's will. And she was doing it for the betterment of the people around her. Now that betterment is difficult to explain. If it's a slap. Not that she would ever do that. There's a story of Papa kicking someone out. And while he wouldn't go, he actually kicked him. And Papa lost some devotees over this. Now we're conditioned, properly so, because Mother's love was so great for Papa and her appraisal of him as the greatest master, the greatest type of master, like Yogananda. Her appraisal of him was that this was someone in Sahaja Samadhi, and that she certainly felt she couldn't question him, nor could she question her own guru. But those people thinking that God doesn't do these things and God wouldn't allow a saint or a spiritual person to do them, God will bring about the events and God will operate through Ramdas, through his foot. Now in the story, of course, Papa had tried repeatedly using his persuasion and insistence. So I have no problem with that. And is there fear in me? Yes, there is fear in myself. I do feel that fear that I wouldn't interpret God correctly. And that when he's asked me to do some things, that I won't do it well and might do a mistake. I might kick when really I was only supposed to pantomime it. I was supposed to only mimic it, to threaten it. But because of my own lack of understanding, my own lack of a spiritual attainment, an attunement is another way of thinking of knowledge with God, that I could make an error of that sort. You know, Mother could be very sharp sometimes, in the strangest times, in the strangest ways. So, what happened to me, I told before, but the one time she was sharp with me, I always claim that she wasn't, but she did have one time. And I think it has to do, and I've reviewed this in my mind, I felt at the time too, this is really, really important, that I would be writing her biography, that I would be involved in describing her life, and that I would be witness to what she was. And so when I asked her about her husband, Ralph, she came back at me really harshly and dismissively. And she's made me realize not to dig into that and not to worry about that. And to be somewhat afraid of delving into that part of her life. She knows that her husband came at a time when she was, I can feel it now, she was so grateful for him coming into her life. It opened up doors in her heart. And in her life, and the happiness of her children, to the fulfillment of prayers to God. So I think this is true, so I'll tell you this. Make of it what you will. I mean, it seems not because of anything I've ever heard. But when you know of a mother's life, that her husband didn't, her first husband didn't have control of his arms, he was paralyzed. And to feel her second husband be able to take her in his arms. You know that would have been something she had prayed to God about and to acknowledge to God that she had missed out on. But he played a very important role to her in her life. And if anything that he did was wrong or could be investigated, I want no part of it. Isn't mother's life sufficient for the story? In the parts that we know, so much was hidden in her life. As it is in all of our lives, much is hidden. And none of anyone's business, really, because it's important, it's so important for the growth to occur, for the events, the challenges to be set before each soul, and for them to overcome, maybe many lifetimes of preparing for that. But nevertheless, once you're in the lifetime when this is occurring, all these things come together to bring about your full realization. But she really, really spoke sharply to me. I didn't feel any pain from it. I took information. Two things, whether I'm right or wrong, this is what I experienced. It was an acknowledgement that I would be involved in her life and to warn me not to get sidetracked. Especially in that way. You know, Master said to Sri Yukteswar when he went back in India and he was given the title Paramahansa by Sri Yukteswar, and then later after Sri Yukteswar comes to him in the hotel, I think he was in Bombay, then he says, I won't reprimand you anymore. That is done. And Master said, oh, please feel free, or please do reprimand me. Because he knew that that experience was at a time of great growth for himself. Everything came from his guru. And he would willingly go back into that mindset, you know, that to be that disciple. He was a full, recognized, great master and guru. And we never hear about that hardly in the autobiography. We hear about his mistakes or his things he shouldn't have said, know, when he first meets Sri Yukteswar, that whole meeting ends in an argument. That's the tone of much of what he said. And he mentions how Sri Yukteswar, in front of his friends. He didn't stop him from bringing friends there, though. But it is in front of people he brought to admire him and to be, you know, brought close to a great guru. So he would reprimand him in those times. So I have little to compare to what Master had, but I accept for that. I felt that clearly it was a rebuke, and clearly, I say it has an element of a sting, but you know, I just, my memory has completely pulled that out of the memory box, and I have no sense of that. She didn't berate me continuously. She didn't set me aside. I don't remember what I did afterwards. But I didn't go and hang my head. For me, but at that time, and still, Mother could do no wrong. And by virtue of my complete, to the extent that I could, acceptance of her role in my life. First of all, let's face it, we all feel this if we have a great teacher, a great guru. This is something that marries into your own sense of destiny. And when this person comes into your life, you know, you have no business criticizing them or challenging them or reasoning what should be and what shouldn't be. You know, Mother could play the guru's role so beautifully. She was so enticing and so attractive as a soul feels. But you're in good hands. You're protected. You know, I was thinking of this the other day. One of the things that I felt with Swami Sachidananda was that my life was in that time was not in Mother was the guru, but I felt that my life was under his protection. Really strongly I felt that. I mean, I had no notion that I should ever question him. He was a pure conduit for the spiritual heights that he knew of and that he lived in himself, I believe, and for Mother's spirit to move through. He was so good to all of us. David wrote a whole book about him. Let's face it. He was so good. Supportive. Small role that he had to do. He had so much else on his plate. But my gosh, he treated us so sweetly. And Swami Muktananda too was the same, almost identical sense around him of safety, of his only interest is in our well-being, in our getting what we came for in the spirit. Swami Muktananda is truly great also. And very loving. And much fun, and much weight is put on his shoulders in the same way. And he's done very well with it. He's made the place grow, and more people know about Papa's teachings. And he understands Papa better than anybody alive. Nobody comes close to his understanding of Papa's teachings and Swamiji's and Mataji's teachings. He's a great master. He's a specialist in a very precious area in our lives and in the world, the lives of the world. Any thoughts?
I remember when I was reading the autobiography about a master getting reprimanded by Sri Yukteswar, and I was thinking, well, David has never reprimanded me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of had like a wish, I wished he would. Well, then very soon after that, I was at Jill's old house, and I was doing, like, I was refilling his water glass or with, you know, somehow, and I was in like an uplifted state, and I did it all wrong, and then he reprimanded me. And then I was like, oh, I got to be careful what I wish for.
Right. And he's teaching you about to be balanced, isn't he?
Very
interesting. That's a good lesson. Yeah. That's wonderful.
But that's the only time I can think of that. Just hardly ever did David.
Yeah, he didn't have a lot of that, did he?
He's very, very loving and patient.
Well, that's because you're so good, Michelle. I mean, David got mad at me all the time.
Quiet, Peter. That's a joke for anybody who doesn't know.
And me, I always got heck. When he would come to Prince Rupert, that I was, in the beginning, it was like I was always on pins and needles. And then just being able to try and be present, because as Michelle said, you're in that uplifted state. And how does a tiny little house expand to hold all those people? Mm-hmm. And then it shrinks down when he leaves, and just all the things that would happen. It was always enough food when you didn't have enough, and just interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's nice.
I was thinking about when you were talking about Swami Satchidananda, and that perfect conduit that he was for God. Without him supposedly even being aware of it. You know, even when he was in a state of the dark night, and that God was moving through him so purely, and David had that same same situation where even when he was in the dark night, that God was flowing through him, even though he didn't get to experience it. And just how I think toward the end, Swamiji got to, it seemed like he got to experience the joy that he was emanating.
Yeah.
And it wasn't invisible to him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my sense.
Mm-hmm.
He said specifically, you all say you feel so much love for me. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't feel it at all. And
he didn't feel that he was sufficient for the praise, or a person to accept.
I got more the sense that he was saying he was not experiencing it. That was it was emanating from him, but that he wasn't privy to that.
Right. And yeah, that's you're right. It's certainly the way he said it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when he was talking about it, I mean, it seemed like there was some sadness.
Yeah.
Not. And David had that same effect on people when he was in the dark night, where lots of people were attracted to him and felt very tenderly towards him, and a lot coming from him. Not necessarily the spiritual folks, but folks around work and stuff that were all very attracted to him.
I felt a change in Swamiji. The last time I saw him, he was not well, but there was a fullness.
Yeah.
And I probably was the last one in this group to see. And there was that there was a change in the way he was speaking. A change in the way.
One thing, Kate, is that one thing he did that was, I felt, was a big change, and maybe that's what you're talking about, is all of a sudden he was speaking extemporary, but also from his own teachings.
Yeah,
right.
And
right.
We would be at these different locations in the ashram. He would just sit down, and then just things would just come out. A whole speech would come out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in the last time I was there once, he wasn't speaking at all. He was people sitting with him and saying, Swamiji, can you speak about this or that? And he was saying, oh, we'll just sit here quietly. And just the emanation that came off from him and was sufficient, of course.
You know, I used to wonder about people would talk about some great saint in India that had been discovered, maybe a teenage boy or woman in some remote part of the country. Mm-hmm. And I would always think, well, why this person? How do people just suddenly start gathering around this person? Mm-hmm. You know, why don't they gather around that person or that person? And I always wondered about that. And then you have that experience of being in the presence of a highly realized God person. And it's just like what Kate was saying. It's this emanation of joy and upliftment. And, you know, I've recounted this story many times, but I'd always see pictures of Swamiji and his mouth, the corners of his mouth were kind of turned down and he looked very stern to me. And I thought, boy, you know, I'm going to go over to the ashram. This is, you know, back when you and I went, Larry, and I'm just, you know, I'm going to respect this guy and I'm going to stay out of his way because he looks like a pretty tough guy. And I go over there and he's just absolutely delightful and so sweet. And you just wanted to be as close to him as you could possibly be. And then I started to understand, you know, people that have this infusion of God where they're just absolutely saturated with God's presence. You just can't get enough of them. And it's you don't have to be very sophisticated. I mean, animals will come to this person. Yeah. Little children will come running up to this person. You don't have to know anything. You just know you want to be there. And you know, that's the way it was with Mother. But I thought, well, she's unique in the world. You know, there's nobody else like
right.
her.
Right.
And then, you know, David, as he was coming up, not in the beginning. In the beginning, he was just a regular guy that was just there at service. But as he developed, he started developing that emanation. And then once again with Swamiji. And those are the only three really God-realized people that I've met. But I suspect it's the same with all of them. You know, you just get around them and you yourself are lifted up. You in spite of your own shortcomings, you're lifted up.
Yeah.
And what greater influence could a person possibly have in this world than to be able to have that effect on people?
Yeah.
And not just people, but, you know, animals become calm, fierce, ferocious animals become calm, and little children that might have been crying or agitated or upset are suddenly calm and wide-eyed and smiling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what an influence. I mean, we all have ambitions in the world. We all want more for ourselves. We all want to have a good life. And I'm thinking, you know, out of all the ambitions in the world, imagine having that as your ambition. You know, you want to be such a conduit for God that just God's just flowing through you all the time. I'm thinking, boy, you know, when it comes to job classifications, you know, that's not this one right here, government, you know, series 17, God realized master. Yeah. Yeah. That I'll go for that one. Right. That looks good.
Well, Larry and I were just at, last week we went down to see Amici and,
kidding.
Yeah.
Where was she?
In Bellevue.
Oh.
And the emanation and the spiritual power that you felt when she walked in the room and was really remarkable. When you think of the people that she has has touched in the world, literally touched, you know, drawn into her bosom, and just an amazing, amazing mission she's had.
Did you guys stick around for a hug?
Oh, of course. That's why we went. We went for that. we did a meditation, and we had the. And it's interesting because what they say is like a hug is a little bit different than what they describe. They want you to be passive, and Amma pulls you in, rests your head on her shoulder, and she embraces. So that way you don't hurt her. Has to do this with thousands
for a chiropractic adjustment inadvertently.
Already have neck brace, unfortunately.
They want your head to be straight. Don't tip your head one way or the other. They had me take my glasses off, and they weren't happy with me. They put them in my pocket on my shirt. So they said, well, can you put them? I didn't want to give them up. She said, well, can you put them in your pants pocket? So she explained, we just worry about poking her. You know, that has happened in the past, and we worry about poking her. I mean, by the way, just to say, these people around her were saints of a type themselves. I mean, seriously, nobody was uptight. Nobody was anything but smiling and helpful. You could turn to any one of them and they would talk to you. And there were a lot of them because they had things to do out in the lobby, all the way in and every single part of it. And they were all there only to help and to.
That's a good sign.
It's a great sign. These are true devotees.
So here in our little town, we have a lot of Amaji fans.
Yeah, good.
And when David was coming to speak, you know, I'd go around town and invite everybody I could that looked like they had even a slight inclination towards this type of thing. And so many times they'd say, well, I already have a guru, you know, Amaji. And I thought, well, that sounds great. But have you heard about David Hickam?
Very different kinds of things. I mean, both the time when we were first in India, you know, traveling with David and Swami Vishwanandan, I went to Sai Baba's ashram, and the thousands of people there, and you're lining up in your little line to get to be able to see him. And I said, thank you, God, that you gave me not too many disciples. And the, you know, Mother and David have a very different kind of mission than Amma has. And is out there in the world for so many, and it's a real blessing when God prompts you, because there's so many years that I lived in Seattle and never felt prompted to go, and I went that time in Mangalore and then now again this time, but God was really prompting us to go this time to see her.
Sounds wonderful. You know, I think Amaji and Sai Baba and all these, they're tremendous saints, and you just look at their following and it's really amazing. But you know, when I'm thinking about it, I go, well, if you're a disciple of Sai Baba, do you get to go have coffee with him?
I know.
You know, do you get to go on a walk around Mount Vernon?
I know. You know,
do you get to go to the wooden boat show with him in Port Townsend? You know,
how about a hot fudge Sunday? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's absolutely true. But God placed all these saints and gurus and avatars in the place that he needs them. And
we obviously in this group all need a lot more special attention.
That's right.
We're riding on the short bus.
That's right. The guru for for the special needs. Oh, well, anyways, I wanted to insert that about saints. How do you?
That's wonderful.
Yeah. That's probably long enough. Unless anyone else had something to say.
Larry, can you just share what you said last Sunday about how it felt when you hugged her?
Well, the hug wasn't so much, not an anticlimax, but it was as though I was being hugged, perhaps is one way of explaining it, when I first saw her. We walked into the room and she was already seated, but there were a lot of people around her fussing, you know. And then, as we sat down, just about that time everything was done. So this, we're talking minutes after she first came onto the stage. And then she sat there. You know, you could think of her as regal, but the main thing was she was looking out onto the crowd. And she was including everybody there. I thought about this. What was so remarkable about her just looking out on the crowd of people? I thought, it's because she's a mother. She saw us all as her own children. She was looking out on this vast, you know, maybe, I don't know how many thousand people. But it was the mother in her looking out with a smile and just concentration and the expression of, we're here now. I'm here, but you're here. So Kate and I were sitting fairly close. I mean, say within 10 rows. And in the furthest close section and centered also beautifully, God arranged everything. So we got really close to seeing her close up, even while she was hugging people. But we were kind of in a bubble in a sense of just, you know, there was a guy translating what she was saying sometimes and then chanting. And it was shorter. The first time I went was with David. It was 2 or 3 hours before the hugs even started. And this was maybe an hour or less. And because we were, the way they had it arranged, if you hadn't hugged before, you could get in a fast, one of the earlier lines. And so that brought us closer. But now, as you're going up, we're being shown the way. They actually have a number on your ticket.
Right? Thank you, Spirit.
Sorry? Say again, Jeff? They have a number on a little ticket, the token they call it. And so they flash that up on this, well not, actually it's on the screen, but there's also a little flagpole thing that puts the numbers up too. So, and ours came so fast they just let all the A's come in, or the, I don't know, we were a D's, but we were still very, within the first 100 or so people. And anyway, once you had your number and we got in line, you're being shepherded along by these saintly people. I mean, they were either really well trained, and I think it could be training, and really, because to put the best face forward and to present Alma in the greatest way, because boy, that is a really remarkable. You know, when we were in India with Tuli Baba devotees, for instance, as an example, it was so apparent. I mean, these were great devotees. They really were. Every single one of them was everyone you interacted with and met was just stellar. But anyway, so they're telling us to move up to the next row and the next row. And so there's maybe 10 of those rows. And then you get up to another, you get up close to the dais and you're sitting in chairs. And then each person, they get, when a chair is vacated, they move you to the next row. You don't care. It's just kind of like a being in Disneyland, waiting on the rides, you know, you're just sitting there watching, looking around, but you're also, there's this glow you feel. And, you know, again, these people were part of that. Nobody was making anybody upset or saying, no, you can't do anything, none of that kind of stuff that you normally see in crowds or crowd control. But, so, you know, we finally get there. And I was just kind of floating, but just kind of it just felt unreal to go up to her. And but you put your hand down next to her knees. She's seated there and cross-legged. You put your hand down and lean forward, and then she grabs you and pulls you in. And she speaks some words in your ear, and I didn't, of course, understand them. But anyway, that was quite amazing. Quite amazing. Yeah, she's a great saint. She's doing things that not many teachers or gurus could do. This is a true spiritual power of God. She's unique in that she hugs people. Nobody in India hugs, you know. Especially spiritual masters of her stature. Mother, of course, we knew that. That was different with Mother, too. But so you don't hug, and then you never spend hours on the dais hugging people into the middle of the night. When nobody's turned away. Boy, it's just that sweetness of her heart reflected in each of the people who were there. She's something else. She's an avatar or something, because she's healing.
You said too, Larry, the other thing you said was that how she, her face was different with each person. Yeah. You could see a different expression.
I didn't notice that, but Kate was talking about that, and other people mentioned it too. So
I watched her as she was tugging different people, and there was different lengths of time. And
definitely.
You could see some of her as she's kind of holding them. You could see that they're releasing the pain to her, aren't they? And some are just so thrilled and happy. So she maybe is reflecting each of them, but giving them something that they need.
It's as though you're being read, you know, in that positive sense, that you don't feel as though they're intruding on your life at all, but accepting all aspects of you just as you are, and acknowledging all things you're dealing with, of course, too.
I mean, hugs from Mother were just amazing. Hugs from David.
And David, too. Yeah.
Just amazing. Yeah. I think the thing that's interesting about Amma is just the scope of her work.
Yeah.
But they talk about her being the embodiment of the Divine Mother, and I really, an embodiment, certainly. Yeah. And
there's only one Divine Mother, and she manifests in different people, doesn't she? Yeah. And she's fully manifested in Alma. This is something special. Who are we to say? But I mean, this is a fully realized soul doing tremendous, tremendous work. Yeah. And what a beautiful face, beautiful person she is.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now, Jeff.
Oh, good. Okay. When you said Jeff, I was on my elliptical machine in the dark while we were talking.
I see.
And I put the thing in my pocket and went out to dim. I had the lights off in the front room, and I put my glasses in a little cubby hole. Anyway, I pulled my water bottle out and they fell out. Well, I didn't notice it, and I almost stepped on them. And when God does something nice, I say, thank you, sweetheart. I say a lot of that sometimes. But I was going to mention something about David. You know, when David talked about my mother bawled him out in front of everybody about the checkbook thing.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Well, when I would fly from Illinois to SeaTac. And I think David picked me up a couple of times, and I guess this one time I sort of wanted him to pick me up, but I also wanted to go see my dad because he was the only parent I had left. I was confused about whether to see him or see David. And I didn't have too good an opinion of my own self-worth, and I thought, well, he's not going to pick me up. And I sent a note to him, and anyway, I said, did you really come down the airport picking up? And I said, yeah. I mean, he said, yeah. And then he said, he wrote me an email, and he said, you're welcome to come anytime, but if you're, if you're not going to stick with it, you know, he went on kind of, it was like, he was very sharp with
me. I see.
And I took that, I said, okay, I'll think on that. I was kind of PO'd. And, you know, what I noticed was that I was afraid to drive the freeway, but I was afraid, I had this fear of coming to see everybody. I mean, it was fear. And the minute he called me out, he sort of broke that fear.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and I kind of think that's what it was about, because then I wasn't, of course, then, you know, he passed pretty close after that.
Wow, that's a great story, no kidding.
Yeah.
Because it happens. Isn't that strange? Because what's happening on the outside doesn't reflect always what happens on the inside. They're always working on two or three levels, or two levels anyway, the spiritual and the physical world. So, yeah, interesting, yeah. That's a very strange story.
Yeah. I asked Mother one time what she said. I couldn't remember. She smiled at me and she says, well, told me, you should listen better.
Yeah. We get to know some great ones on this earth. Let's say the closing prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my being.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Amen. I'll play some music on the way out.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks for coming, everyone.
Thank you, Larry.